and welcome to Big Al's Community.
I'm looking forward to having you here with us once again every second and fourth Wednesday on WEFT 90.1 FM and streaming live globally at weft.org. This is Big Al's Community Chat, and my special guest tonight is an old friend, a good friend, someone I've worked as with on the county board, and is now running again for the county board coming up in the primary next week. I'd like to introduce to you Miss Astrid Berkson. Hi, Astrid.
Hi, Al.
How are you doing tonight?
Just great.
Good. I want to welcome to my show. I want to tell you that I'm really excited about your candidacy and working with you for so many years on the county board before I accidentally retired about a year ago now. Boy, I can't believe it's a year ago already.
Yeah.
Your goal here is to explain a little bit about yourself. I'm going to read a little bit of your bio. I'd like to get a little bit more background on you. And this is an educational and informational show, as well as trying to straighten out some issues that have come to bear now in this political arena of the county board election. We know what's going on at the national level. We know what's going on at the state level. But we certainly hope that we can have our listeners understand a little bit more about what's happening here in your district. So first, we know you're a progressive Democrat, and you're representing District 9 in the Champaign County Board. You served since October 2010, and you're running again for the position in March of 2016 in the Democratic primary. You put your electorate first. A hallmark of this is your transparency. I know that. You strive to keep the citizens of Champaign County abreast of the story behind the story regarding the county government and its elected officialdom. And you're committed to restoring the Champaign County Democratic Party to its former winning ways as an inclusive Big Ten party welcoming diversity. I'm honored to have you on our show. And could you give me a little bit more of your educational background? People may not know that you're a PhD.
I got a bachelor's in math from Mount Holyoke, master's from Chicago, and a PhD from Northwestern. I taught at Cal State till we came here and in 66, and I taught 8 years here at the U of I in mathematics. And then
wow.
I went into the insurance business.
Wow.
For 20 years.
Only 20 years. Okay.
Only 20 years.
Well, your background certainly belies what I hear when I see you work with the rest of the county board members. You ended politics in 2008. When you became a member of the County Board Democratic Party Central Committee, you served there until 2012, and you were appointed to the County Board in 2010.
Right.
And then December 2012, you were running again. And I appointed you at that time to the chair of the Community Justice Task Force.
Yes,
I did. And
no favor.
Well, you know, I knew you could handle it. You're a tough lady, let me tell you. It is a tough job. There's no doubt about it. I felt obligated to do that because I knew you had tremendous public service in that area, and you knew exactly what you were doing, and I felt very comfortable putting you in the chair. Tell us a little bit about what you've done in that capacity.
Boards mostly. Women's Fund is what really chilled me out. You learn a lot when you go on a board of a place like that and realize what goes on that you don't see. And I guess I've been very conscious of and guilt-ridden about what goes on that we don't see ever since. Because there are too many people whose lives are too hard and we don't do enough for them. And I would like to.
Okay. When you entered politics, what was why politics? What made you decide that you wanted to do public service?
Well, I had been what I call street walking. I had been canvassing my district for ages and ages, and there hadn't, I was being a precinct committee person, and we didn't have a committee person because I didn't want the job, and I thought I really should. So I just became a precinct committee person, and which is what I've been doing anyway.
In certain areas, you've had national recognition.
Well,
why don't you give us a little bit of background on that?
The whole justice thing. It got started with Carol Ammons. If you remember, they felt we needed a new jail, and we had a jail committee. And in a meeting that lasted till 11:30 at night, it was all law enforcement people, and we added Carol Ammons to it. And that was really the beginning of the reform movement, because when they came back with the short list of three companies to assess our needs, we asked for a minority report, pun intended, from Carol. And she pointed out that the three finalists all had a conflict of interest. They assess our needs, and then they build what they say we need. So they have an interest in assessing a very high need so that they can build a lot of stuff. And she said there is one person here, one applicant, who will build jails or assess needs, but he will never do both in the same place. That was Kalmanoff. And again, that was a long meeting, and we chose Kalmanoff, even though he was not one of the finalists. And he did a huge assessment of our needs.
That was $250,000 towards this very, very important issue. Continue on we go on to that.
Well, one thing that people have forgotten is that he said our jails did have needs. Everyone who's saying, you know, build programs, not jails. Yes, we need programs. But we have no facilities in the jail for physically and mentally handicapped people. We have no private cells except at the old jail, which is full of vermin, and none that take hospital beds. We have prisoners with hospital beds. We have prisoners who need to be protected from the other inmates. We have prisoners from whom the other inmates need to be protected. We need to have handicapped accessible rooms and private rooms. And alas, facilities for the mentally handicapped, because that's the only place we have for them. We're working on trying to have an assessment center where they can take the mentally ill someplace beside the jail, but we need to have some humane place to put them.
Well, if I remember correctly, Dr. Kalmanoff, I'm sorry to interject there, Astrid. Dr. Kalmanoff stated in his report, if I remember correctly, that the downtown jail needed to be raised.
Yes.
It was inconceivable that we would spend the kind of money to correct what's down there that would cost more than building a whole new jail. So his report stated that would be part of what he would report, that downtown jail needed to go. So if you would continue a little bit more about our social justice program.
With his report, and they established a community justice task force locally. I chaired it. We had Scott Bennett on it and a number of other, Carol Ammons, a distinguished group. And our report received national acclaim. Even Michelle Alexander of the New Jim Crow wrote a letter for us. And one of the things that we needed, well, there were a number of things. There was the treatment of the mentally ill. And we've had a big transfer of money from the mental health board into taking care of the people in the hands of the justice system. And also the county has put in new money to help the people, the mentally ill, connected with justice. They also wanted reentry services. It makes a huge difference in recidivism when you help people integrate back into the community. And we've had it only for a couple of years, and already the people who do not take part in the program have a 33% recidivism, and the people who do have 13%.
Well, and that is certainly a big difference.
Well, and it saves the money that we spend on reentry, we more than save on jail.
Well, the drug court program also is one of the diversion programs that we have, and that's worked beautifully as long as we have the funds. But without a budget at the state level, I'm not sure how we're going to be able to handle a lot of the issues that we have that cost money, like facilities. For instance, if you would give us a little bit of an idea of what's been happening in the facilities area, I would appreciate it.
Okay. You all remember the nursing home.
Who doesn't?
What's happened since 2008, we have not gone into debt. We've stayed even, but we have essentially not had a maintenance budget on the buildings, and buildings will fall down if you don't maintain them. So we had a complete assessment of our $150 million worth of buildings.
Wow.
And what needed to be done, in what order, and so on. And we also, incidentally, have to come into full compliance with ADA by 2018. And that's a pretty penny.
What is that going to cost us?
$825,000 over 3 years.
Just a couple of bucks.
Yeah, just a bit. Yeah. But the fact is, the county income has been going down. And we don't have enough money for the amount of maintenance that is due now. Brookings has a bad roof. The nursing home has a bad roof. If you don't do bad roofs, you are going to end up deep in the bucket. And we have to do those now. Two of the buildings, the Ilias building and the big part of the old nursing home, cannot be saved. It would cost more than to build them. They just have to be knocked down. So that's two of them gone. But we need an awful lot. If you've been by the jail or the garage lately, what used to be big cement slabs now looks like marble. And all those little designs in it are the cracks we had filled. They're falling down. And we need to do that maintenance. We're only doing it on an emergency level. On the roof of the nursing home, they put the laundry so that the lint from the laundry goes into the
air ducts. Right.
And clogs up the air ducts, and they have a very short life because they're full of lint. I mean, there have been a lot of construction mistakes made, and but a lot of it, you do have to maintain buildings, and we got to do it, and we have to have the money somewhere. My opponent says, well, if we don't, he agrees we need to do all of it. But he says he won't spring for any money until he feels that we have a suitable long-term plan.
That's Steve Summers.
Steve Summers.
Is your opponent.
Yeah.
And I was at that debate. It wasn't a debate. It was more like a question and answer session at the city council building a few weeks back. He did not answer the question, actually.
Yeah. He kept saying we didn't have a plan, and we do.
And before we go on, I have a couple of announcements here, Astrid. Okay. All right. This is a bit of a disclaimer. The views and opinions expressed here and those of the speakers do not necessarily represent those of WEFT. It's a board of directors, associate station manager, or Prairie Air Incorporated. This is a First Amendment right that we have to speak our minds, and before this is over, we're going to be speaking our minds. But first, we are in a pledge drive. This is our fall pledge drive, one of the most important parts of the year for WEF 90.1, and I'll tell you why. We have been working it as a deficit for the last year. The reason for that is we lost a $50,000 grant, annual grant, that used to come to us for nonprofits that we are. And because of that, more than half of our annual budget was gone overnight. We have been working very hard to restructure and renew our opportunity to stay on the air with you. We've been here for 36 years as community radio and a nonprofit, and we're going to ask you now to help us. Please help us. It's Pledge Time Drive at WEF, your community radio station. Who is a part of the WEF radio community? We have programs featuring environmental and civic issues, women's writers and musicians, rousing gospel choirs, the music and lore of India, Gothic rock, Celtic songs and stories, and international politics and human rights. And that's just the Sunday schedule on WEFT. Show us that you support multicultural media. Become part of the community radio by calling WEFT and pledge your tax-deductible donation. The number is 217-359-9338 or fly WEFT or 217-359-9338. Call now to contribute, please. We really need your help here. Okay, Astrid, we're back on. What I'd like you to do is give me a little bit of an idea of the Justice Task Force, how you worked it, how this became reality, please.
The Racial Justice Task Force.
Yeah.
The Racial Justice.
The Racial Justice Task Force.
Right. It was high on Kalmanoff's list. It was high on our task force list. And it was born. As Justice and Social Services Chair of the Champaign County Board, I was happy to report to you the launching of the Champaign County Racial Justice Task Force and on its makeup of 21 distinguished members, which five of us, including Lorraine Cowart and I, chose. The many people involved in the Racial Justice Task Force birth process have been working very hard with one idea in mind, to create a task force that will serve as a role model for communities across America and thereby hopefully contribute to ending the scourge of racism someday. The report began by displaying the minutes of the two successive milestone meetings at which your county board authorized the formation of the Racial Justice Task Force. And incidentally, at the time it was passed, there was no way to pass it with a budget, so it didn't have a budget. Mm-hmm. So we had a first meeting. And they couldn't hear each other without microphones because it's a large board. So now they have.
They were in the Shields room and they didn't have microphones?
Right.
Yes.
So now we have a little budget.
Oh, wonderful.
As a tribute to all who have labored in this task, I have annotated the minutes in order to shed the light of truth on actual proceedings as opposed to the misinformation that's arisen in certain quarters. After these minutes, you will find further documentation spelling out both the ground rules for the RJTF and its membership list. Every effort has conscientiously been made to ensure that the charter members of the Racial Justice Task Force have the maximum institutional freedom to chart their own course, unhampered by any suffocating red tape, rules, or things we tell them to do. They will decide their own course.
Well, that's fantastic. It was a hard job. At first, we couldn't find 21 people to work and volunteer their time. This is a long and arduous committee that they volunteered for. And
it's a very distinguished committee.
It is. And I'm very happy to see that our community has volunteered to work on it. It's a very important issue. Before, you were talking about the inmates and the problems on mental health in the justice system, in the jails. I was looking at an article today, News Gazette, and it hadn't got much attention, but Governor Brown Schroeder is leading a bipartisan effort to reduce the state's prison population. Many people think nothing is getting done in Springfield because Democrats, Republicans are hopelessly at odds over how to address the state's problems. But mostly they're right, but not completely. The budget standoff appears hopeless. There's been some progress made on the criminal justice issues. I'm guessing that what he's done here is he's appointed a bipartisan commission to determine how to reduce the state's population by 25%. That would be enormous. The problem is I'm assuming there's no money
he's trying to save money by shrinking it.
That's true. So tell me, last week the group of legislators unveiled legislation aimed at keeping people out of prison or assisting inmates after their release.
We're already doing it.
Please,
right.
Yeah, please explain that to your listeners.
Okay. First I want to say though, Kalmanoff was amazed. The local judges here.
Kalmanoff, let me explain so people understand. Kalmanoff was the director of the company that flew in from San Francisco to Champaign to do the report on the justice system and the county jails.
Our needs, right.
And our needs. It was a needs assessment. Go ahead.
We have already cut our jail population by a third. The judges did it. They have weekend arraignments and one day charging so that people don't end up waiting 2 weeks in jail like they do in some of these other counties before they get charged. In fact, if they're in by Friday, they're out Monday morning. And so we don't have nearly the population of people, innocent people, waiting for arraignment that a lot of the people. And having cut it by a third, it's not as easy for us to cut it further because the things that we have already done is what they are telling other people to do. So, yeah, we have drug court. We have peer courts. We have a whole bunch of youth things like the peer courts and I forget the names of them all, but a whole lot of ways, and the Youth Assessment Center for keeping kids out of jail, trying to get them station adjustments, all sorts of technical terms for just keeping kids out of jail.
And $100,000 towards a reentry program. Okay. I'd like to go over that a little bit.
Okay, the reentry program, we have something like 400 people a year or a month coming into
Into
Champaign County.
From the jails.
Jails and prisons.
Yes, right.
And it's really a huge job of, for instance, if they need housing, they need jobs, or they're going to be back in. And the most important thing seems to be family. Family, jobs and housing. And if the family, for instance, is in public housing, then a local rule only, the prisoner cannot come out and join his family in the public housing. And, you know, saying somebody comes out of jail and can't join his family is not a way to keep it good. We have caseworkers. They now get in touch with the people before they even leave jail and ask them. I forget how many take part in the thing, but probably a good number. And they help them with training, jobs, housing, identification, getting bus passes so they have transportation, and it makes a difference. As I say, without it, it's 33%, and with it, it's 13% recidivism. So it works. And I think we're probably saving money even when we spend $100,000.
Okay. That program is one of, I think, the few in a county across the state, this reentry program. And I'm very proud to say that we are all working on that.
We, to
bring that into fruition as well.
Well, you know, all these things were happening when you were chair. Whole Kalmanoff justice reform system.
Well, thank you for that. I appreciate it, Astrid. I want to go into a few other things here, with you. You have a gentleman, who is, running a campaign, to replace you.
Yes.
On the county board. His name is Steve Summers. And, sometimes you wonder about politics. you wonder if, there's an opportunity for someone who's worked hard, someone who's worked for the community, someone who has, done the best they can to represent their district, as you have. But to have people send out, these divisive cards and letters to the constituents in your district, I'm looking at one right now, and I think we need to talk about it. It's a postcard, and believe it or not, it has a picture of Astrid that was pulled from another picture with her discussion with Carol Ammons. So it was photoshopped. It was pulled out and put on a postcard. And on the other side of the postcard, they put Donald Trump. I have never seen anything quite like that. I certainly understand the fact that in politics, you want to portray yourself in the best light. But when things like this happen, you wonder exactly who's running the show and who wants to, for whatever reason, for power or for whatever, to take the place of a sitting representative who has done an excellent job.
Well,
please explain this postcard that is absolutely untrue.
Well, Steve Summers' name doesn't occur on it.
No, it doesn't.
It's paid for by the Young Democrats. And the Young Democrats have said that they're going to take over the Democratic Party by 2018. And they may be right. And that's how they do it. Lots and lots of lies. Remember the midnight letter they sent out about you?
Yes, I do.
It was sent out first class, so to arrive the Monday before the election, so that you couldn't refute all the lies. It was just a solid list of lies. Coming from the chairman of the caucus, which is a nothing position, who said that the caucus had asked him to get rid of you. You know, lies, just one lie after another.
And now they're doing it to you, Astrid.
Now they're doing, well, you know, Steve Summers is one of the people who sent in those letters on Carol Ammons.
Yeah,
his letter on her kids was the Sunday before the Tuesday elections. So she had no chance to answer it either. The whole idea is to tell these things and make them look incriminating and give people no chance to answer them.
This was a letter written by Steve Summers, published in the News Gazette on March 16th of 2014. It was the Sunday News Gazette, and it said, "Meet the Candidates." A column for 103rd Illinois race was very interesting with respect to how columnist Tom Kasich chose to address Carol Ammon's controversial bid for a seat on the Urbana School Board. This goes back before Carol was elected to the representative to replace Jacobson. Kasich stated that the school board members alleged that Miss Ammon's children were attending school in both Urbana and Rantoul, which she denied. Why would Kasich not look into an article by the News Gazette reporter Ann Cook that stated that Carol George, now Ammons, has a 13-year-old at Urbana Middle School, and that George said in a recent interview that her second grader attends school at Rantoul City Schools? Or that in 2003, Miss Ammons attempted to rent a house from the elected Urbana official, admitting that she lived in Rantoul since July 2002. Well, all I can say is that Steve Summers, who seemed to go against one of our now leaders of the Democratic Party in the state, is now running for county board on the Democratic Party. That seems quite interesting, Astrid. What do you feel about Mr. Summers' discussion of the issues at the question and answer last week?
Well, of course, I've mentioned the facilities thing.
Yes.
I mean, that's ridiculous. The aquifer. You, of course, one that really worked on that endlessly for years. And I am not happy. I don't know how you feel about the consent decree, but I think it's terrible because it leaves 27,000 or more, up to 77,000 tons of the manufactured gas waste, the stuff we had at Fifth and Hill, still sitting over the aquifer. And they say they will put some more clay over it, which isn't going, we're not worried about it's coming up. It goes down. It has volatile chemicals like benzene in it. And you know from Fifth and Hill how they travel. Well, they trucked all that stuff. They probably trucked ours over to Clinton. They trucked all the manufactured gas waste from all over the state over to Clinton. And putting clay over it will not keep it from going down. But by the time the bad news happens.
Okay. You can only use nice words.
Right.
By
the time there will be millions of tons of other stuff on top of it, there will be no way to get it out. If it isn't done soon, it cannot be done. And incidentally, they have wells, test wells all around it to test whether that stuff is getting into the water. And guess who tests those wells? The company who owns the landfill.
They own the engineering company.
That tests the wells. So, you know, it certainly will be too late before they ever find anything wrong.
Well, I want to agree with you on the consent decree. I made myself very vocal about it. I was asked and called for my opinion on it, and I explained that the lawyers for the waste company in Clinton wrote the consent decree pretty much and got themselves out from under an expensive item, but a safety issue that seems to have been forgotten right now. I had a feeling that once this consent decree was passed, if it was, everybody would say, oh, everything's safe now and we're all finished with this issue. Well, we're not. The aquifer is still in danger, and it's still up to you out there to make yourself known to your county board members that you're interested in making sure that the water that you drink doesn't end up like Flint, Michigan, because the gas wastes, if they leaked into the aquifer, there may be a way to clean up Flint by changing the metal pipes, but there's no way to clean up the aquifer. It gets polluted. We are done. You'll be drinking out of bottled water for the rest of your life. Go ahead, Astrid. I'm sorry.
No, I just saw a funny thing on the Internet today. Do you remember when the jobs were in Detroit, in Michigan, and you didn't drink the water in Mexico?
Yes.
Yeah. Now it's the reverse.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? To save a little money, what politicians won't do. It's abhorrent what they've done to the children of Flint, Michigan.
Oh.
I need to take a break here for a moment, Astrid. We'll get back to our conversation here in a moment. But if you have a passion for bluegrass or local music or reggae, then you're in luck, because you're in tune to 90.1 FM, WEFT Weft. Our programming is created by our volunteer staff at Weft. It is elected committee members, enthusiastic airshifters, and dedicated members who decide what is unique and important to hear on the radio that you will not hear anywhere else in Champaign County. Weft is home to a wealth of knowledgeable hosts who bring you fascinating programs each week. Whether you're into gospel or jazz, Celtic jigs or Delta blues, salsa or hip-hop, we've got a show for you. If you have a passion for unique music and information, show it and help us continue to provide the service to you. please dial 359-9338 or go to our website at wef.org. That way you can give us a pledge that help us stay on the air. Please. It's something we've hoped that you will decide to do so we can keep this kind of music and informational programming on your radio. Thank you. All right, let's get back to Astrid. Thank you so much for being here. I really appreciate it, Astrid. I just wanted to add a few things here. One, a letter to the editor just came across my desk. Well, it's because I moved it from the left to the right, so it came across my desk. It was a letter, again, in the News Gazette, but this one's from Tom Betts. We all know Tom. Many of us who know Tom, who worked with him for many, many years. Tom was more than 20 years on the county board, vice chair of the county board, and was instrumental in changing the culture of the county board when there were only six Democrats on the county board, and watched how they worked to change that culture into now a majority of the Democratic Party. But what's taking place on the county board is not what I would consider a positive situation. So I'm going to read this letter, if that's okay, Astrid.
Lovely.
Thank you. And its heading is, Berkson has earned re-election to the board. This is just in February here of this past month. Most folks focus on the presidential and senatorial candidates in the upcoming Democratic primary. It's easy to overlook the local races for county board that often have more day-to-day impact than what happens in Washington. I served on the Champaign County Board for 16 years, including a period of time with Astrid Berkson. We shared the same district. Unlike many on the board at that time, she consistently did her homework and asked insightful questions. When I left the board, I believed the district was in excellent hands, knowing that Astrid Berkson would act as the conscience of the county board. Berkson looks out for what is best for the entire county, not just her district. She is not a puppet for the leadership of the local Democratic Party that all too often treats any elected Democrat as a heretic if they do not march in lockstep. She did not vote for the anointed choice for the Democratic board chair, but voted for an alternative Democrat who won. This was a principled act of conscience on her part. I personally had misgivings about this decision, but I respect the courage and integrity it took for her to cast such a difficult vote. It is not by accident that Jennifer Putman, Ralph Langenheim, and I, Tom Betts, who have each represented this district, are all strongly supporting Astrid Berkson for county board. We have the experience to know that we need more public servants like Astrid Berkson, not their elimination. Well, Tom wrote a beautiful letter in support of you, and I want to thank him for that. You have quite a few endorsements, Astrid. I've noticed the list that runs a full page of names of some of the let me just quickly pull one out here. George Garland, professor of physics at the University of Illinois. You have Jennifer Putman, former Democratic member for 30 years on the county board. Bernadine Evans Stake. You've had Tom Betts, attorney, Democratic member of the Champaign County Board. He served for 16 years. You have a whole group. Oh, by the way, I see my name there. yes, I'm in support of Astrid Berkson for re-election. One other thing I wanted to talk to you about before we move on.
Incidentally, that principled vote was for you.
Yes, it was. Okay, I won't have to go back.
And while we're at it,
yes,
Geraldo Rosales, when asked by Tom Kasich about it, said, "We weren't the only ones who felt that way. The others were just afraid of the reprisals that were going to happen."
Yeah.
Because the boss requires that he sets the rules and decides who will do what.
I want to move on to another little issue here. It's not a little issue. Again, it just came across the internet. Rush is on investigative leave. That's Officer Rush. I know. He's been stripped of his police powers, Chief Anthony Cobb informed Rush that he's been placed on investigative leave because he is the subject of an internal investigation. Rush was first notified of the investigation in the letter. This gentleman has cost us
over
untold money.
Over $300,000.
Give us a little bit about what you feel on this issue, please.
Well, I feel on the issue that he's horrible. He has operated against the public interest. He should probably never have been a policeman. But the fact that they couldn't fire him is not Julia Reitz's fault. The fact that you can't try him is not Julia Reitz's fault. The laws so protect police violence that you really can't charge them very easily. And the real problem was he should have been disciplined the first time he did one of these dreadful things. And instead, the police chief found no problem. And he did three of these things and was not disciplined. And then he wanted to fire him. But you have to discipline him about three times before you can fire him. And that's in their contract. The police chief should have read the contract and disciplined him accordingly, and we'd be rid of him. We'd still have paid the $300,000, but we might be out from under this last, I hope it's the last, lawsuit. Heaven knows whether it's the last, but I hope it is. And I've seen the video, and it was shocking what he did to her. I mean, the police violence is awful, but you have to manage the police properly so that you can keep them under control. They lost control of this guy because he was not disciplined.
Okay. It has been quite a rush on rush for what's been going on here. I mean, he had four excessive force lawsuits, three in the city, settled for over $320,000. Fired by Cobb in 2014, but then reinstated again by an arbitrator.
Because he had never been disciplined for all those things he did.
Yeah. So there was no record for the arbitrator to go by. And so he was brought back as a police officer. Mm-hmm. And I think the best thing that Julia Reitz could do was keep him from ever being able to carry a badge by keeping him out of the court system.
Yeah.
Once she did that, he was no longer really a patrol officer if he couldn't go to court and testify.
But I think it says something very serious about the police force there, that 15 or 16 of his fellow policemen came and testified about what a fine fellow he was and what a good policeman he was. There's something wrong when they feel that way.
At this point, we're 45 minutes in to our show. It's amazing, isn't it, how fast time goes when you're having fun. And I do have fun here at this microphone.
Yes, you do.
It's a wonderful opportunity to educate and inform our constituents and our listeners. I just hope that our listeners are taking this very seriously, that this could be one of the most important national, state, and local elections we've had in my lifetime for what's taking place right now. There just seems to be too much power brokering, too much money thrown at this, and we need to take a step back and learn about each of the of those opponents of ours who would use any method to be elected. And it's now being pointed at Astrid because she wouldn't go lockstep with the party.
With the boss.
That's right. Would you give me another break here, Astrid? And we'll be finishing up here in just a few moments. We do have this pledge drive, which is so important to us. And I want all of you to know, maybe you've tuned in us on 90.1 and thought, hey, what an interesting radio station. I've done that. I've never heard anyone doing so much stuff, and we do. As Astrid will tell you, when she walked into our Hall of Fame here, we have over 30,000 discs, all broken down by genre. It's a pretty amazing place. If you ever want to come see us, we're at 113 West Market Street, right down from Mike and Molly's. Take a look at this place. It's unbelievable. Well, we want you to know this about WEFT. None of us that you hear live is paid to be on the air. Not a penny. And most of our broadcast hours are, in fact, programmed live, which this is, by volunteers. Over 70 different people host shows live on WEFT each week, and we are hearing WEFT work because we love it to. But operating a radio station involves expenses, as much as goodwill and hard work. So twice a year, we ask you directly on the air for your financial support. Together, we'll make WEFT work for over 34 years. But as always, to keep on going, today, next week, next year, we need to hear from you. Please call us, 359-9338, to pledge your tax-deductible donation, or go to WEFT, W-E-F-T.org, WEFT.org, so that you can do it online. Please, give us a helping hand, so that we can continue to give you the type of music and informational programming that you enjoy. Thank you. Ashton, we're coming towards the end of the show, but I'm going to give you, don't worry, I'm going to give you plenty of time here. I wanted to get any more of your feelings, anything out that you want to discuss.
Yes.
Please go right ahead and give us what you would like to say.
First, I want to remind everyone, vote to the end of the ballot. The local offices down at the bottom very often have an awful lot to do with your life, and people sometimes don't go all the way down to the local offices. And they often make more difference to than the president. The other thing I want to talk about is the nursing home.
Please.
Care for the elderly and poor has been a county responsibility way back in English history. And when I was little, it always was. And we need people now. Don't really accept it as a county responsibility. They want it to be a break even. They think they shouldn't have to spend any money on the elderly and the poor. Well, there's a problem because Medicaid, which is the majority of the patients, pays less than the actual cost of taking care of them. The for-profit nursing homes can limit how many Medicaid patients they have. Well, of course, that only leaves more for us. And if you think it's more our responsibility, then you understand we need to keep this thing going. It's making cash flow profit, but it needs maintenance and it needs more of the original construction mistakes corrected. So it's worth it because we are a brother's keeper. Okay? And we need to do it right now because the roof needs help. Other than that, I would like to see, I'd like to see the Democratic Party go back to its old big tent ways. This business of purging the party so that the central committee, the elected precinct committee people, in 4 years has gone from 71 to 30, and it lost more this year. And we got swept in the countywide races at the last election for the first time in 36 years. And it's not an accident, because the party has become dysfunctional, and we need to restore the Champaign County Democratic Party to its former welcoming glory. And I hope all of the Democrats will come out and help that happen.
Astrid, thank you very, very much. Is there anything else you'd like to say about your candidacy before we go off the air? Ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank our very special...
Oh, wait.
Go right ahead, Astrid.
Yes. My Facebook, Reelect Astrid,
yes.
And my blog, astridsblog.com. And a lot of the dirt is there.
yes, please go. I wanted to repeat that one more time, Astrid. What was your Facebook page?
Reelect Astrid.
Reelect Astrid. Astrid.
One word.
And your blog?
Astrid's blog, no apostrophe, ASTRIDSBLOG.com.
Okay. Yes, if you go there and you'll find a lot of interesting information.
You'll find what they did to Al, too.
Well, that's okay. I'm enjoying what I'm doing right now, Astrid.
Yeah,
believe me.
Being yeah, I think it's more fun.
It is more fun. It can be. I do miss the opportunity to
work your tail
to work my tail off. Well,
that's what you did.
To work for the community. For me, this is my home now, 36 years, and I just love Champaign, Urbana, and Champaign County. And in a couple of weeks, coming up, I'm going to have Deb Busey as my special guest. Deb has been in county government for over 30 years. She is the administrator of Champaign County and is just an extraordinary woman with a talent that I'm sure we're going to miss when she retires at the end of March. As you know, you've seen in the papers that they're looking to replace her.
They can't replace her.
No, thank you very much, Astrid. You're right. I was in her office today, and we were talking about old times, so to speak. And I just reiterate how brilliant she is. To run a program that has more than 800 employees, has 25 different departments, everything from facilities to the justice system, is just extraordinary.
She attends all the meetings. She single-handedly, when the tax revenues tanked in 2008, she personally kept us in the black ever since. And it's amazing. I don't know how she does it. If the money isn't there, then somebody underspends. It's all done by magic. But she is there till 9 o'clock every night working the magic.
She is.
Which I can't
know.
Believe how hard she works.
I'm there. I remember for the years that I worked with her, what a wonderful person. And so, be prepared to hear, Deb Busey from the beginning to the end of her career here on Big Al's Community Chat in 2 weeks on, Wednesday evening at 8 p.m. I want to thank Astrid.
It'll be a treat.
It will be. Thank you, Astrid.
My pleasure.
I have a few other things I want to go over here, but I really appreciate your coming in, and good luck next Tuesday. Get out
pleasure.
And vote for Astrid Berkson. Go to the bottom of the
ballot.
I voted today, and I went to the bottom of the ballot. Of course, Astrid's not in my district. I wish I could vote for her, but I couldn't. But go to the bottom of the ballot in district...
In every district.
In every district.
I'm in District 9, but in every district.
District 9. Well, right now, it's Astrid in front of me, and so I'd like you to vote for Astrid Berkson come Tuesday. Or before, because early voting is going on right now.
Right.
Okay. Thank you, Astrid. I appreciate it. Thank you. Okay. Well, what else can we talk about here for about 7 or 8 minutes? We're going to talk about Lovie Smith, a little sports. I'll tell you, stunned as I was. Now, if you remember, a few weeks back, guess who was my guest? My guest was Bill Cubitt. And here he sat across from me, and we were discussing the future of Illini football. I was absolutely elated to his positive attitude, to the way he had just hired 4 new assistant coaches that were in the midst of moving to Champaign, and some have already gotten here. And he was just a delight to have on my radio show. And as Josh Whitman said, he's a wonderful, great guy, but circumstances happen in business. Well, I thought it was distasteful on how it was done. Stunned by the shock of seeing him go and 4 new assistants now turning around looking, well, what jobs would you have in the middle of March in football? Not very many, if any at all. But and then came the second shock, $21 million for a new head coach by the name of Lovie Smith. Well, that sort of turned everybody on its head, and it really got everybody excited. And when I went to the news conference to hear Josh Whitman and Lovie Smith be introduced to the Illini Nation, I was in a room over there at the Bofelt, and I was stunned There must have been 25 to 30 cameras, hundreds, literally. The place was packed with journalists and sports people from the radio and TV and journalists and Chicago Tribune and Sun Times and Scout.com and from every venue. The excitement was national. Well, of course, Lovie Smith is a well-known name in the state of Illinois. Don't we all know the Chicago Bears in the Super Bowl? And to have that kind of a head coach here was sort of astounding, because we never really put ourselves out over the years to get the best week of the best if we could. Well, $21 million, I guess, gets the best of the best. But that is sort of the mean right now in the Big Ten. There are a number of head football coaches making a heck of a lot more. The key is now, where do we go from here? Well, the allowance for his assistants is nearly $4 million. That's more than three times what Bill Cubitt was making. So this should be very interesting. I've already had a few announcements of some assistants. One gentleman from Louisville, Luke Butkus, is coming back. He's bringing in an assistant from the San Francisco 49ers. We're going to have one heck of a coaching staff here. Of course, what do you need? You need the players. And if there isn't anything more important, recruiting is the most important thing that you can have here in any college game. Remember, they don't do much recruiting in the pros, even though they do try to recruit free agents, but it's really when it comes down to money in free agency, who can pay you the most, and in most cases, they're the ones that win. This should be an interesting experiment here to have a pro football coach of 20 years coming in as our head football coach. So I am really looking forward to that. Josh Whitman said a couple of weeks ago that he's not afraid to make tough decisions. Well, he certainly demonstrated that point. On his first official day, he gave men's basketball coach John Gross a vote of confidence, and congratulations, John. Beat up on Minnesota today by, I think it was 30, though no one was really surprised since half their team is either suspended or injured. Tomorrow will be a real test. We're going to play Iowa, and we'll see just how we fare against them, though it's nice to see Michael Finke come back. He had a really good game today, 17 points, when he wasn't even scoring in double figures or even high single digits for about a couple of three, 4 weeks. Hopefully he's broken out of that, I guess, freshman wall, if you want to call it, and he's ready to go. So we're looking forward to him coming on very shortly. Well, we're coming towards the end of our show, and I have just one more pledge pitch to make here. At WEFT, we recognize that our community is diverse, so we want to serve a wide variety of audiences and communities. WEFT has more different types of programming than almost all the other stations in this market combined, music from around the world, plus jazz, blues, and plenty of American roots music by old and new artists alike, plus our no-nonsense public affairs programming. During Pledge Drive, we ask your support. WEFT, diverse programming with your financial gift. WEFT is here primarily through your support. The number is 359-9338, or please go to weft.org and make your pledge. And shortly, we're about to leave, and I want to thank all of you guys for coming on and listening to Big Al's Community Chat. See you in 2 weeks when Deb Busey, the administrator for Champaign County, is my special guest. Thank you, and good night, all.